Hi, I'm Dr. Sab Cohen-Hatton. I'm a neuroscientist specialising in human and animal learning mechanisms.
I'm Jamie Penrith. I specialise in canine predatory behaviour, and I'm also a former police dog handler.
And I'm Danny Wells. I'm a dog trainer that specialises in dangerous and unwanted behaviour.
And every week we sit down to talk about the latest research in canine science.
And more importantly, how you can apply that research to your own dogs to get to know them a little bit better.
Welcome to the Dog Scholar.
I've got a question.
Go on, what is it?
Question me up.
I think you'll like this question.
Let's hear it.
Do dogs prefer people?
To?
Other dogs or anything?
To tacos? Nope.
Yeah. Yeah. Who prefers people to tacos? Tacos are amazing.
So do dogs prefer the company of people to the company of other dogs?
Exactly that.
Mm. Big question.
I think humans prefer the company of dogs. I certainly do.
Yeah.
Present company accepted.
Yeah, I think.
Well, look, lots of people seriously think that they need to get another dog to keep their dog's company.
And lots of people are wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's it, because I think people bring something different. And it's interesting that people would think that, you know, to kind of replace human company, they need to bring in the company of another dog. I suppose if someone's working all day, then they might think if the dog is there, then they need some kind of company. So it would replace something.
I think a lot of people also make the mistake of thinking they can resolve unwanted behaviour by company. They convince themselves, or they've been convinced that another dog will resolve the problems they're having with their first dog, which is obviously not the case.
The reality is,
and then they end up with double the trouble.
Yeah, well, just like with people.
Yeah.
If you introduce someone naughty into the dynamic, they're not going to be made good by everyone else around them. They're just going to corrupt everyone else, aren't they?
I think that's what we've experienced. Do dogs prefer people to dogs? I mean, it depends, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it depends on who the person is. It depends on the interaction that they give with the dog. It depends on whether the dog's pro-social with other dogs, you know, how much experience they've had of being able to play and interact with other dogs without humans meaning anything significant to them. It's an interesting enough question, but I think it's one that's multifaceted.
I think genetics matter as well, obviously. If you've got a real, like, you know, fearful dog. I mean, dogs can be fearful of other dogs, but they're most likely to be comfortable in the known, especially when you have like street dogs that are brought over. They're blatantly a lot more comfortable around dogs' company than people, because people are the unknown. Mm. And as we know, dogs are better with the known.
Yeah, but lots of people try and take their dogs to dog parks for socialisation, don't they? And they think they're doing the right thing. I'm not a fan of dog parks.
I'm not. It's absolute canine chaos.
Yeah. I've never, other than when I've been to America, and like you know, seen them in New York and stuff like that, I've never actually seen one.
I think most parks with a field in the UK are classed as dog parks now. Everyone, it's just canine chaos. The only time I'll use them, if there's a gated area, I'll use it for some training where I can leave them all to the chaos and stay on the outside and get a little bit of engagement.
But it's that concept that they need to play with other dogs for socialisation. It plays into this, doesn't it? Is the human enough? I suppose the question is, do dogs play with us for the same reason that they play with other dogs? You know, there's no doubt they love to play. It's part and parcel of how they bond, isn't it? But there's other things that they get from it as well, beside the kind of social enrichment. It could be access to resources or reducing stress through contact. But I suppose the question is, if there's no other dog available, will a person do? Or do they prefer the person in the first place?
I think it's, again, you know, it's very subjective. What one dog likes, another dog might not necessarily like it. I like to have a little wrestle with my dogs. I wouldn't wrestle with Logan, because I know I'll put him in a state to drive and he wouldn't have control of what he does. He's just that type of dog. He's just, you know, very serious dog. Ralph, me bull breed, and little Lenny, the terrier, and Wade, if you go like that and they're bouncing all over the place. I remember I tried to do this with Flint, me Labrador. And Flint's just not about that life.
Aww.
So with Ralph, he'll come over and I'll push his head, and then he'll go, and I'll push his head again with the other hand, and then I'll have him guessing which hand's coming and so on. I tried to do it to Flint, and Flint just literally went, "What the hell are you doing? What are you doing?" He just didn't want to know. Aww. However, if I throw something, it's like, "Oh, game on, let's bring that back." But he's just not about that rough and tumble life. Do you know what I mean?
Luther, I do this thing with Luther where, like, we'll play and I'll be kind of like leaning over him, and I'll put an arm between his legs and grab the other leg. Like a dog biking. And he'll be going, and then I'll do it the other side. And when he wants to play, like if I'm kneeling down or doing something, he'll come and he'll back onto me, and he'll literally put his arse on my lap as if to say, "Come on, play between my legs."
Yeah.
That's how he really bad.
Yeah.
But Jimmy Jimmy's not into that at all. Jimmy loves playing with socks. So he'll grab a random sock out the laundry and start waving like it so that you can play. So you can play and he'll rag it. But the only trouble is he took it a bit too far and he keeps going in the laundry and he's progressed from socks to pulling out underwear, but which is fine, except for when you've got guests coming around and the dog comes trotting out with your underwear in its mouth.
Yeah,
and you're like,
best.
I can explain.
Yeah, yeah.
No wonder dogs prefer playing with people, eh?
I know.
I think it's, you know.
Do your dogs play with your underwear?
No, but Sherlock will eat it.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, he's one of those dogs that every now and again you'll see him straining to go to the toilet and there's a sock, you know.
Yeah,
gutted that you've thrown the other one away about a week ago, thinking that you'd lost it.
Yeah.
Quick swill will sort that out. But no, I mean, I play personally, you know, do I play with a dog? Yeah, I do, but not in the sense of that creating rough and tumble as much or so much like that, yeah. You know, because I don't really want, we've got a fairly busy house and I don't want the dogs seeking out rough and tumble with other people as they come in and things like that.
Yeah,
but any sort of play that I do with the dogs is, you know, throwing toys for them or, you know, I'll lay down on the floor with them and give them a cuddle and a rub and things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I interact with them. I play with them. What's the point in having one if you're not going to be
quite
completely honest with you, I think, you know?
It'd be pretty boring for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's treating them as an individual. You know, if you have two children, they're not going to necessarily be into the same thing. So you'd coordinate your time accordingly. Yeah. Yeah. You'd coordinate your time in accordance to what that one likes and that one likes, wouldn't you? You wouldn't try and force this one to do that and that one to do this. Do you know what I mean?
No, I agree with you.
Yeah. So, does the science tell us whether dogs get the same thing out of people as they do with dogs, or are we just enough? What does it say, Sab?
It gives us an indication. The research suggests that their motivation to play with people might actually be different from their motivation to play with other dogs. One study basically went to popular dog walking spots and observed people walking their dogs. About 402 dog owners walking their dogs, and some had one dog with them, and some had multiple dogs. And they didn't find any evidence there that dogs were playing with people less when they also had another dog to play with. Now, it might be that people with multi-dog households are just kind of more into their dogs, so they're more likely to play with both of them. So it might have skewed the results a little bit. So this same study went on and gave a survey out to more than 2,500 dog owners, and they asked them how many dogs they had and what the interaction with their dogs was like. And again, it found a similar thing. In multi-dog households, despite the dog having access to another dog to play with, it didn't diminish their desire to play with a human. They were still playing with the humans as much as a dog in a single dog household would. Now, if the motivation was the same, then you'd think they've had their fill with playing with the other dogs. So, you know, they'd be less interested. Now, I don't particularly love surveys because I think that they can be really subjective and the answers people can interpret the question differently. So I'm not a big fan, but there was a follow-up experiment, which pleased me from a science perspective. Now, they were dogs that were taking part in nutrition trials. So they weren't housed in a household with a family. They were housed in kennels and they lived with another dog in the kennel. So they were kenneled in pairs. So it was a bit more controlled in experimental terms than pet dogs, where it's a bit harder to make sure that everything's the same. And in this study, the dogs were allowed to play freely with another dog or a human, and then a tug toy was thrown in. And what they found is the dogs were more likely to instigate play with a human than they were with another dog. And when they did, they were a lot more interactive with the human than they were with the other dogs. And they were more likely to give up their toy to a human than they were with another dog. With the other dog, they were a lot more competitive and they wanted to win more. Now, it might make sense because if they depend on the human for resources, and again, certainly in that kind of situation they would, because it's still the person that's bringing them food and all of that kind of thing, then reduced competitiveness is an adaptive quality because they're less likely to hurt the relationship by being competitive. So they're likely to still get the resources brought to them. But look, whatever the reason, it's really clear to me from this study that dogs get something very different from playing with people.
I love it and stuff like that. I have when I let,
do you want me to say it again?
Yeah, I've got me fill, you're all right. When I take my two Malinois out, Wade and Logan, I walk them over towards the field and I go on, and they'll sprint as far as the eye can see, have a wee, and then they'll come back and they'll have a little fight. Logan is quite aloof in character. You know, he won't just come in and voluntarily give you his attention. He'll go off and do his own thing, but Wade is the complete opposite. Mm. And what I started doing is like kind of using Logan as an external reward. I'll have to get a video of this and show you because it's quite funny to watch. So what'll happen is they'll be rolling around, they'll rough and tumble, I'll stand there minding my own business, and the next minute, Wade will fly back to me heel. And he'll look at me like, what are we doing? And I'll go, down, sit, stand, heel, turn left, turn right, and go on then. And he runs off and goes and wrestles with Logan. And he'll do that for a bit, and then he'll come running back again in the heel, and I'll do it again. Down, sit, stand, heel, walk around, go on then. Runs off and plays with Logan. So it's kind of like, he does his bit with me, and then that's his little reward to go and play with Logan. But he seeks that out. And obviously it's habit because he started it once, we've done it, he liked it, he does it again. Yeah. But it's quite funny to watch, you know what I mean? Mm. It's like he wants the two, but he does seek me out where, again, characters are different. Logan is quite aloof as a dog.
Yeah. Hey, what about that thing? Because they talked about it in this study in the sense that, you know, they were more likely to give up their toy to a human.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think of that thing that it's not good to let dogs constantly win games? Because people say that, don't they? They think that if you let the dog constantly win the game, it's going to think it's stronger than you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't...
I'm not a big fan.
No, my thoughts on that, I mean, there's a couple of things as well that I wanted to bring in on, just a couple of questions on the study, you know, that I'd throw out is, we're talking about dogs here in there that are kept for nutrition trials, right? Mm-hmm. So they're not dogs, I take it, that live in households. No. So I would imagine that their interaction with humans is reduced in comparison to dogs that, I'm not saying that it's non-existent, but reduced in comparison to dogs that live in households. Dogs that live in households are owned and, do you know what I mean? And they'll get a lot of play with them and stuff like that. So I wonder whether when the dogs in the nutrition trials actually get the option of playing with humans. Okay, I see dogs, you know, I'm kenneled with a dog, but I see a human and it's a human who's interacting with me, you know, and that's something novel and it's probably something that's a little bit more exciting than what I'm doing in my day-to-day activities and things like this. With the giving up of the toy, you know, or the tug toy or whatever it happens to be, dogs are more likely to compete with one another for a resource. And if one dog wins that resource, I do see the opposite to this with my own dogs, where if one wins it, it will go back and tease the other one with it and make them get hold again and play tug.
Instigate the play.
Yeah, but a lot of dogs won't do that. A lot of dogs will compete over resources and keep them, whereas the human, generally, when you're playing a game of tug, the idea is to play the game. Mm. So by a dog giving it up, then the dog wins it again, they give it up, they win it again, or you throw it and it animates it, you know, kicks in the prey drive and the dogs, it comes to life, the game comes to life, far more so than perhaps it would do with another dog, particularly if the dog is playing with another dog that is of the type that would want to keep possession of that resource and not engage in play with the other dog, you know, given the opportunity.
And it's interesting, there was a bit of research back in 1995 that looked at this. And they kind of, they put it down to this idea that if you give up the toy and the dog wins the toy, then you're going to get bad behavioural problems.
Yeah,
it was based on people looking at how wolves behave and assuming that winning toys is the same kind of thing as the dog winning the battle for the best bit of meat at the end of the pack hunt. And so it's actually a really human tendency to zoomorphize on this. Yeah. So it's like you're attributing animal forms to something that, you know, that is a different animal, arguably. So it was a very kind of human assumption. It doesn't necessarily extrapolate to the dog in
that's
the same
not to say that there isn't them the one dog that will create a bit of a resource issue with. Like I've said before, you know, in many of these episodes, everything is apparent in one. You know what I mean? But we go with the statistical numbers here, and you know, letting your dog win is not gonna cause issues in most cases. What I will say is, I can show you with any one of my dogs, when I let my dogs win, they will not run off with anything. They will run and push it back in because I'm part of the game. That is a healthy interaction when you're playing with your dog. If you're letting your dog win something and it's running off and that's not what you're looking for. You're looking for the dog to go, come on, and again, let's play again. You don't, you want to be an intricate part of that fun sequence. Do you know what I mean?
A lot of owners really have a common problem or make a common mistake whereby when they play tug with a dog, they want to win.
Yeah.
The owner wants to win, or they'll then hold it back and they'll say, sit, no, sit, no, you're not getting it, not until you sit, not until you sit. Forget all that.
Yeah.
bring it back in, bring it to life, release it, let the dog have it, let the dog have it, wait until the dog comes towards you, then engage, then let them have it, then engage, then let them have
100%.
It. 100%. Let that dog think that you are a fundamental part of this play, of this fun, and you won't have a dog that wants to take things and keep away from you because you've got a dog that sees...
When you're thinking about the formalities before building the foundations of the game, you ruin the game as a byproduct.
Luther's like, he is absolutely drunk on Tug. But for him, I let him win and then he's like, well, this is no fun. I'm straight, and he's straight back. He doesn't want to run off with it. He's like, it's only fun if you're hanging off the other end of it.
Logan's very possessive in his genetics. Which is why he's really good at bite work. He wants to claim and own and guard and things like that. So I had to really teach that with Logan. I had to really work with that. It took the best part of a year to do it without conflict. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And now it's like you can see like it's still that possession's still in him. He'd much rather take it, lay down, hold it, and grip it. He'd much rather do that. But it's a conditioned response now. As soon as I let go, you can see him pushing it back into me.
So I would, just like that, I would say, even if you've got a dog that is... If you want to create a dog that McBride is saying that playing Tug creates, don't play Tug. Yeah. Instead, let a dog walk off with things and own things and don't engage with them and let the dog realise that these are possessions that I take and they're mine and we don't interact, so really you're not relevant in it. If you want to avoid that kind of relationship... Engage and interact with the dog as a puppy, if you possibly can, as a puppy. This was something that I covered when I was raising the pups and showing it was the letting them have it, the letting them have it. If you bring me in something that's rubbish, like a tea towel, I'll throw you something that's brilliant. You bring me in something that's brilliant, I'll throw it again and then I'll bring the tea towel alive and such as that. So everything, anything and everything becomes something that's not to be kept, but to engage with. Do you know what I mean? Which is anybody can do that. It's good fun. It's good fun. It develops a healthy relationship. It doesn't develop this dominance rift between yourself and the dog.
But I mean, you've got about 11,000 dogs, haven't you? I mean, do you find that they still prefer to play with you or do they prefer playing with
each other? It's a completely... I mean, I haven't got that many. I've got six dogs now. But
that's about 11,000.
I had more, but you know, for one reason...
I've got five, 1,100.
For one reason and another, but...
I've got three, that's 11.
It's like, no, I don't find that...
In dog years.
My dogs will play with one another, go out, run around the garden, go out, run around when we go out for a walk, do what you want to do, interact with one another, play with one another. They'll do that. That's absolutely fine. When I get involved, if I call them, you know, individually or if I call them collectively, I'm involved. And I'm now the sort of like, dare you say, the bringer of joy. You know, I'm the one that... Or he's called, not he's called, it's his master's voice, but he's called, whatever. And it's, he's called, she's called, they've called, we've called, everybody calls for ice calls. But the fact of the matter is, they've called, it now means there's something fun going to happen. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So we can be individually or we can be collectively involved in, you know, an enjoyable experience. Yeah.
So if dogs get something different and prefer something from us than other dogs, what is it? What exactly is going on? And why did they prefer us to other dogs? What does the science say?
Oh my God, I found a really, really good neuroscience study on this. And in this study...
That was an excitable really then, so I'm quite excited.
I'm really into this one. I'm so into this one. They looked at dogs' most powerful sense, which is their sense of smell, right? And they use it to perceive the world around them. For dogs, it's their primary sense. It's like sight is for us, arguably. Mm-hmm. You know, they see in smell.
Yeah.
And this study presented dogs with sense of both familiar and unfamiliar dogs and humans and their own scent while they're in a brain scanner. Now, it was really interesting because then they were looking at activity in the part of the brain called the caudate nucleus. And we've talked about the caudate nucleus before on this show. And it's the part of the brain that's associated with expecting rewards. And activity there is linked with feeling good because you're anticipating something good happening. Now, if dogs preferred the other dogs, you'd expect to see more activity in the caudate nucleus than you would than when a human's presented and vice versa. You know, they found the smell of humans that the dogs knew. So familiar human, what do you reckon? Do you reckon they preferred the human to the dog or the dog?
I reckon they preferred the human to the dog.
I reckon it was the human.
Bang on. It's almost like you've been reading science with me, gentlemen. Yeah, they absolutely did. There was far more activity in the caudate nucleus when they could smell a familiar human than they could when they had the scent of other dogs. But again, you know, humans are linked to reward.
That's what I was going to say. So I love it when the science correlates with actual living experience of training dogs. Yeah. I love it. I'm not surprised.
Mm-hmm. Activity there means something good is coming. And that means dopamine is released, right? And because it feels, it's not, people think dopamine happens because you feel good. Dopamine gets released when you're expecting to feel something good, right? And that's certainly what they were seeing here. And that can impact on behavior because it's a marker to the dog to approach. It means that something good is going to happen. So go and seek it out. And that's why praise and interaction
So the dopamine is anticipation of the reward.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why praise and interaction from you as a handler is such a powerful reinforcer to dogs when you're training, you know?
People take it for granted.
Yeah, they do. Don't get me wrong. We don't know whether it's nature or nurture. We don't know whether it's based on experience.
Who cares? It's all
Exactly. So I love that study. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah. Again, you know, a lot of the dog knowledge out there.
We dare say it.
It's so interesting that the actual science is in line with what we're seeing as dog trainers. And, the amount of like controversy in the dog training world, it's really refreshing because we don't have these conversations. We just train dogs and we enjoy training dogs. And to see someone, you know, put a dog in a brain scanner and it pretty much confirms what I've believed from day one. It's quite a nice feeling.
Yeah. And I think as well, it doesn't just matter that it's in the dog training world either, is it? Because that filters down to dog owners as well, doesn't it? What goes through us goes to other people.
And it definitely gives us an insight, doesn't it? I mean, dogs are so unique because they've evolved to live alongside us. And this just goes to show for me how their brains have evolved as well to be successful living amongst humans. You're not going to get that with parrots. You're not going to get that with great apes. But dogs' brains have developed to allow them to successfully interact with us. And that for me is why they've got such a special place in human society.
I think so too, absolutely.
Yeah.
So would that say to you that dogs prefer people over other dogs?
Certainly, in this study, preferred people that they knew to other dogs. Definitely,
I'd say that. When I let my dogs out, as you know, Stampede, they all come out. They're all in joy together, but that joy is directed towards me. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm just like, whoa.
I mean, Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to see this on a much larger scale because, you know, brain scanning studies are hard to do. They're expensive to do, and you can only do them with small groups of dogs.
And requires staying still. They've got to be trained to
go in the brain scanner and stay still. And it's really loud, and that is tough to do. But, you know, if you could do that on a much larger scale and pull out the individual differences, I'd love to see whether there are dogs that prefer other dogs as well, and then kind of unpick their history and try and understand why. It'd be interesting to see how dogs that have never experienced people respond in that case as well. Whether there's something about the novelty of people, whether there's something more innate.
Do we know, I don't know if we do or not, on the brain scanners, when the dogs are in the brain scanners, obviously they go, you know, they're rewarded with, I'm assuming, food for going into brain scanners. Are they continually rewarded whilst they're in the brain scanner, or are they taught to accept duration? Because, you know,
they are.
They're taught to accept duration.
Because otherwise they'd be anticipating the reward.
But is there a reward when they come out?
And then the dopamine's there.
Yeah, is there a reward when they're released from the
Because that would affect it as well, wouldn't it?
Potentially,
that would be interesting.
I'm not clear from that.
I don't know either. I just wondered whether or not
with dopamine, anticipating reward, they could be sat there the whole time for 20 minutes anticipating the reward.
Or going to get released.
You're right. But even aside from that, actually, I'm not surprised that the reward center in your brain is activated by scent. Because that's the other thing here. It's activated by scent. I mean, it's really powerful, isn't it? I mean, different perfumes can remind you of different people, different aftershaves.
And it can cue like memories and predict outcomes.
When we were walking home last night, the smell of freshly cut grass, and all of us were there going, oh, it's so nostalgic, it reminds me of school. And then it's like, I hated school. But it does, it evokes really strong memories, like you could be there again.
Yeah, yeah.
Now imagine that being your primary sense, and imagine how evocative that must be.
Certainly if it's massively intensified beyond our capacity to even understand it, you know.
Yeah. And now imagine that smell is reminding you of your favourite person in the world, who you're always excited to see, who you're never disappointed to see walk through the door. Mm. Imagine that. That's I don't think I have one of them. Yeah, you do.
You're it.
Yeah, maybe me.
You're him as far as
I smell myself. Yeah. Which makes a change because usually it's us smelling you, Danny.
Yeah. And then it just evokes joy. I just spread joy everywhere again.
It elicits positive feelings.
One silencer at a time.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Right, we'll be right back after the break. Me, Danny and Jamie and the whole Dog Scholar team just want to take a minute to talk to you about a cause that's really close to our hearts, and that's Street Vet. Street Vet is an amazing charity that provide free veterinary care to people experiencing homelessness with their pets. When you're rough sleeping, and I know because I've been there, that relationship that you have with your dog gives you the only social and emotional connection that you have when you're completely isolated. And Street Vet help to promote that bond, and we love them for what they do. You can find out more about the amazing work that they do and donate by clicking the link in the description. Let's raise as much as we can for this important cause. Back to the show.
So what we're saying is dogs like people, but we don't know whether it's through their past experience with us or is it something more innate? What is the science going into detail about any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, good question. And we know that dogs are associative learners. We know that they pair things that they've experienced together and they learn what outcome they get from that experience or from the behaviour that they do. So if every time I nudge a bowl and mum puts food in it, I associate nudging my bowl with getting food, right? Yeah. That's the association that's made. And dogs are the same. So it could be that because we're the ones that feed the dogs and we're the ones that play with our dogs, we're simply acting as a signal for food or for play. And that's why the dogs prefer us, because they're like, oh, you're a symbol of goodness to come. Now, on the other hand, dogs are hypersocial with humans, aren't they? We know that. We've seen that time and time again. And their cross-species bonding is so unique. And neuroscience does give us a clue, you'll be glad to hear. One study paired three neutral toys to predict food, praise, and nothing at all. And they presented these items to the dogs again in a brain scanner. And it looked at the activation in the brain area. Associated with the value of rewards. Again, similar, but it was the ventral caudate. So it was a specific part in the caudate nucleus. Now, remember, the more you value something, the more activity that you're going to get in that particular part of the brain. Now, in a whopping 13 out of 15 dogs, don't forget, I did say in brain scanning studies, they're relatively small groups. But in the vast majority of them, it lit up as much or more
for praise,
than it did for food. Now, all dogs preferred praise or food to nothing, which, you wouldn't be surprised about. But some dogs definitely had a preference. So, yeah, there are individual differences for sure. But if it was just that humans were signaling food to the dog, we definitely would have seen much more similar activity for the two. So, yes, it depends on the dog. Yes, there are individual differences, but there's definitely something there. And in fact, they did a follow-on experiment where dogs could choose between items that would either get them the praise or the food. And the individual choices, the one that they went to, whether they went and they went for the thing that was going to get them praise or they chose the thing that was going to get them food, actually correlated with the brain activity that they'd seen in the scanner previously. So if they were presented with the food item, and there was more activity in the ventral caudate, when they went out and did the follow-on experiment, that was the one that they chased after and that was the one that they went for. So individual differences, yes, definitely. But when you think about how essential food is for dogs, how absolutely essential it is, you can see how crucially your dog values you.
Yeah.
You know, when it's as important or more important. It's just amazing.
It really is.
I think anybody who's been training dogs or lived with dogs for a period of time, certainly training dogs for a period of time, will absolutely know how important it is to have that relationship with your dog, you know, to have your dog see you as something more than a food dispenser, but someone who is in and of themselves of greater value than the food. That's the goal. That's the goal for, you know, for anybody listening, anybody watching who's training your dog. Your goal isn't to control the behavior of your dog through external means. Your goal is to be able to influence and affect the behavior of your dog because it's you, because of who you are and what, how the dog sees you, you know, what you represent to the dog, and to become that reinforcer, you know, to become that higher value reward above and beyond food items or toy items. Do you know what I mean? Is essentially the pinnacle, as far as I'm concerned, of what you want to achieve in a healthy relationship with your dog, a strong relationship with your dog.
And you earn that with consistent interaction over time.
Yeah. Well, you were then able to stand a high chance in the majority of situations. Obviously, there'll be, you know, extreme situations where perhaps you wouldn't compete, but in the majority of everyday situations where you're out in a park or something, you know, in your garden or wherever it happens to be, there's not much going on, or there may be, you know, bits and bobs going on, but seeing you as being the main reason, the main reward to come back to interact with over other things that are going on.
Yeah.
Go for it. I mean, that's got to be top of the list for anybody's training.
When we're out and about, I just see myself as base camp. Whatever you do, you come back to base camp, and then we go off again and we do whatever, but you come back to base camp.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't surprise me it's nice to hear it confirmed. It's nice to have it scientifically validated. But it is something that, as I say, with experience, you would know that to be the case. Yeah.
And you know, it's important to mention that no two dogs are the same. You know, like I think I've said before with Wade, he'd just give me that, just generally interacting with him every day, doing his normal training, feeding him, taking him for a walk, even just taking him for a wee. He naturally wanted to bond with me and come back to base camp. Logan, very independent dog, very, very aloof in character. You know, dare I say, he's a dominant dog. He's very assertive. He's not feared by anything, and he's aloof in nature. I had to really work towards that, and I think a lot of pet owners can be guilty of just assuming that they deserve that from their dog, and then when you think that, you're not prepared to work for it. And usually that coincides with me last dog. You have to understand you're working with an individual. Yeah. This dog isn't your last dog, and your next dog won't be the same as the previous two dogs before, unless you're lucky and you stumble across that sort of relationship. But understand that you're not going to be given it in every case, and there's nothing wrong with having to work for it. And in fact, sometimes it's easier to enjoy. It's better to enjoy it more when you're enjoying the fruits of your labour and you've had to work for it.
Mm. You definitely see those individual differences. Luther loves Tug. Like when I'm training him, I know that will be the thing that he'll come back for.
Yeah.
Red, not interested at all. I mean, we're Red's second home. She was an adult dog when we got her. I'm not sure if Tug or play was ever used as a reinforcer previously, but also she hasn't got many teeth, bless her. Mm. So, you know, that doesn't help. She's not really interested in it. But food, oh my God, I've never seen such a gannet in all my life. Yeah. You know, so she definitely has a preference.
Even without the reward of gameplay or anything, I'm just talking about the general, dare I say, you're me dad. Do you know what I mean? I just want to be in your company. All the things, you know, that you take into consideration for owning a dog. Some dogs will just give you that sort of bond. Mm. Others, you'll have to work a little bit harder for it.
Yeah, and it can be quite frustrating, can't it? People who've got a relationship, who've got that bond with a dog, and you think, how the hell did you get that?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? She absolutely loves you. He absolutely loves you. And you're there busting your back end trying to get any kind of attention from your dog who would sooner sniff what another dog's just left at the side of the verge. Do you know what I mean? How demoralising is this? I've just lost to, you know, pony poo or something like that. Something else has been more important than me. Yeah. You know, and it can
get frustrating.
Yeah, right. I mean, when I was working, there's a clip I did.
As a waitress in a cocktail bar.
Yeah. Well, that was when I met you, wasn't it? When I was working with Tilly, when I was training her, there was a clip that I did.
Don't you want me?
That I put online.
Don't you want me, baby? Yeah.
So I'll do it again.
Yeah, go on. All right. Sorry. You've done that. That was that competitive thing where we all had to say something.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've got a video clip of Tilly when I was training with her, and you know, people will say she was a Labrador, and people will say, oh, Labradors, you know, you beat them with a belly. They're dogs that are absolutely food, you know, they're food driven. They'll do anything for food. And I was working with her, and what I was working on was sending her to a target So in front of me was a bowl. Well, it wasn't actually in front of me because I was facing away from the bowl. And what I wanted her to do was she was standing alongside of me in heel position. And then she had to turn around, run back to the bowl, put a paws on the bowl, pivot around the bowl a little bit. And with me just giving the, or bringing out my hand to the side, my left-hand side as it was, bringing out my hand to the side, that was a signal for her to leave the bowl, run back into heel, and then to send her back behind me again to go into the bowl to target. Now, repetitions of that behavior happened, and all that she was getting, well, she was getting multiple reinforcers. She was getting the touch of my hand on the side of her head when she came into the heel position. And as I was stroking her, I would say to her, good girl, good girl. And then I'd send her back again. She'd come back in. She'd come back. Good girl, good girl. And then at the end of the exercise, I would go and she'd just, hey, look, look what I've just done. And I went over and I got like a piece of cheese off the side and gave her some cheese. She didn't work. For the cheese. No, that wasn't the motivation. The motivation was do you know what I mean? It was the reinforcement that I was providing, that social reinforcement. And the same is true of like her granddaughter, Tinkerbell there, who I was, you know, 2 days ago doing some work with her. And she knew that I was going to send her to search for something. But I just wanted to get her attention, get her focus on me a little bit. So I was offering her food because she'd done a little something that I wanted her to do. Not really interested. You know, it looked like snaffle for it, but just fell out the side of her mouth. And it was mouth, and it's like, when do we go? When do we go? And I'm picking pieces of food up off the floor. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And
get that.
Technically or theoretically, you would say, well, it's a Labrador. Food is a primary reinforcer. The Labrador will take the food over anything else. No, not necessarily. It was the interaction and the ability to, or opportunity to do what she is.
Flint's the same. The opportunity to fulfill drive disposition will always take over. And he is a gannet. Literally, if I put my old boots in his bowl, he would consume them. He would eat anything. But you put that dog in a state of arousal, drive to get a retrieve or bring something to me. Because what people don't realize when you're teaching dogs to retrieve, a proper retrieve, the dog isn't driven by what they're getting. They're driven by bringing it back to the handler.
Yeah.
And that's what the driver motivated is. I actually spilled that into detection dogs when a previous company I worked for, we were training search dogs for football, Premier League football stadiums. And I noticed the guys that were working there and the girls, they couldn't get the ball off the dog when they rewarded the dog, you know, when you sent a stooge. Mm-hmm. And the dogs that I trained weren't driven by the ball. They were driven by, I've got the ball, shove it in and let's go again. And it changed the game because they were happy to release that because then the game starts again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah, Flint will choose that over food any day of the week.
Yeah. I think for, you know, well, I don't think, I'm pretty much certain that for millions of people who are listening or at home, or just millions of people throughout, not as millions of people listening or at home, but
billions,
global,
think big,
but for millions, billions, you know, for all these people
trillions
who are struggling with their dog, I think it's nice to hear, or hopefully it's nice to hear, because you probably do your training and you use your food and you use your toys, but your dog's not particularly bothered. You know, you think, well, I'm being told that this is the way to go about it, but it's not, your dog isn't particularly interested in it. But if you can generate that relationship where you think, okay, ditch that then. Yeah. Let's just go for interaction. Let's go for fuss and rough and tumbles, and let's generate that relationship instead and put it more on a, what you'd call a social reinforcement basis instead, which is just play.
Yeah. And you know, the ultimate goal for all pet owners should be, you don't need any reward. You don't need any punishment. The dog's just driven by the behaviour itself or the interaction.
And so now we know all this stuff from the science, what difference does that make? What can people do practically to help them?
I think we touched on something before that I saved for the practical note, and that is access to valuable resource, toys, balls, things like that. A big thing that pet owners in particular, they overlook is they give their dog free access to all these toys and rewards and things, and by doing so you devalue your interaction with those toys. If you don't leave, I don't leave my dogs with balls and tugs and things like that for obviously they're high in arousal and drive, so they run the risk of chewing them all up and destroying them and possibly consuming them. But if they don't have like free access to them, when I bring that to the table, they're like, whoa, let's play. And a big thing with that I've had over the years I find with clients is their dogs, I mean, they haven't got like really like specimens of working dogs. So they're having to do a bit of drive building to build the desire to want to play and interact with them. So giving them dog you know, the dog's free valuable resource, balls, toys, all different toys. The dog's not really that interested. They go, yeah, okay, I'll play with that when I get home. Do you know what I mean? So just taking that away. And then when you bring it, it's like, oh, this is a good thing. It's not something we do every day. I always explain it like when you're a kid, especially in the 90s, you didn't have a McDonald's every day. You had one about every 8 weeks, every 10 weeks. But when you had it, God, it tastes good. Because it's rare, it's scarce. Do you know what I mean? If you have it every day, you take it for granted.
Mm. Yeah, you probably do.
Again, just on a practical tip, you know, from developing that relationship, from making your dog think that I prefer people to dogs. I know that I have, and I know that you have, and Sab, you probably have, and everybody else, you know, who's got that kind of relationship with their dog probably has. But there isn't a pure reliance on just giving you stuff. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Where you're actually building a solid relationship through, you know, the development of control over the dog and giving boundaries and guidance to the dog, you know, dare I say the word discipline to the dog, which simply means, you know, enforcing structure and making you know what's right from wrong, etc., so that you can understand in an appropriate way. Yeah. That doesn't create dogs that don't want to be with you or terrified of you or such. A poor version of it may well do. Yeah. A poor version of it could well do. But the appropriate balance of, you know, heavy reward, guidelines and discipline where required is what dogs love.
They do.
They thrive on it. It helps predictability. Really important.
Yeah.
Of course. I need to know, why should I do this? Oh, you know, if I get a lead correction or something for doing this behavior, and I know that I'm going to get the lead correction for doing that behavior, but I know what the behavior is that I should be doing, and I know that I'm able to control whether or not I get the lead correction, and instead I get the praise and the interaction from yourself. Doesn't have to be a load of food, simply the social reinforcement. Boom. Yeah. We start to understand one another, and we can start to really, really engage and have a good time together. You know, it doesn't need to be all about trying to buy it.
No, it doesn't.
That point about interaction and the impact that it can have is huge. I mean, I experienced homelessness when I was younger, and I slept rough on and off for about 2.5 years. And I had a dog that was with me, Menace, and I spent every waking moment with that dog. And the bond that we had was massive. And the impact that interaction had was way bigger than any food reward that I could have given him. You know, that was what he thrived on. And actually, it was what I thrived on as well. You know, it was that interaction and that relationship that you got with it. And I think that we can really underestimate that sometimes, can't we? It's not always about kind of bribing your dog to do something that you're encouraging it to do. I think we forget sometimes how crucial that, just that bond, just that interaction is, and how special that can be.
Absolutely.
Right. What about some questions? Yeah, I love listening to questions.
So the first question that we've got, thank you for sending it in. My spaniel thinks that feathers are out to kill him. Oh dear. He's like a spring lamb if he sees one when out walking. Why is this? And more importantly, what can I do about it? Danny.
I think it's just the unknown. I had the same thing with my bull breed, Ralph. We had, I think it was one of the baby's parties. It was one of them balloons filled with feathers. And at the end of it, we popped them all ready to clean up. And as they were floating down, Ralph's like, snap, back away. He'd never seen anything like that before. Again, it's the unknown. Yeah. So you probably find that the dog's just reacting to the unknown.
Unusual for a spaniel, though, eh?
It is unusual for a spaniel, but you know, never say never. Every dog can be spooked by something. They'd want to get a grip.
Luther doesn't like it with Prosecco bottles when they pop. Yeah. Ironically enough.
He's fine with champagne.
He's fine with champagne. No, he doesn't like it. He hates it. We were over a park and there was someone having a picnic there, and just out of the blue, they popped a bottle and he jumped out of his skin. And since then, any bottle that you pull out the fridge, it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, is Prosecco or what, but any bottle you pull out the fridge and he's like, I don't like that. Yeah.
You'd have thought it'd have habituated to it by now.
There goes that theory.
Damn it. Yeah, any wine will do. Yeah. Or gin. A pint. Yeah.
And for the what can I do about it, you know, aspect of that with the with spaniel and your feathers, get some feathers, have your spaniel, walk along on a lead with your spaniel, drop some feathers along as you're walking, let your spaniel just walk along with you, don't allow him to bolt and whiz off at the end of the lead, but what's the worst that's going to happen? It's a feather.
Yeah,
it's not going to do anything terrible. You don't need to go down multiple, you know, avenues of overcomplicating yeah. things. It's a feather. Oh, yeah. no, what's it going to do? Not much, mate. There's yeah. loads of them. Come and, on,
and
on
some,
we go.
Some people, they can be a bit neurotic in their personalities and they can allow them feathers around them to consume them, and then they overthink the dog, and then that in turn makes the dog even more spooked. So if you're one of them people, you could also target them towards something of value, whether it be a food bowl, a tug, a ball. You can put the ball in sight, walk through the feathers to get the ball, and as soon as they've crossed through the threshold of stress, they get the ball or the food, and it's job done. Mm-hmm. That can usually help people as well as it can help dogs, because both of you have got a target to fixate on.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Good second question.
Yeah, let's have
okay,
it.
Okay, second one then. My dog's funny with people I don't like. I have to be really careful with it. Why is this, and what should I do about it? That's a big question.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's unfortunately a question that we can't really answer without seeing the dog and what's going on. But what we can say is what you need to do is be working with a reputable dog trainer, because any dog that is uncomfortable with people has the potential to go really wrong really quickly.
And I think as well, for anybody else in a similar sort of situation that might think, yeah, my dog can be a bit funny with people as well. What should I do about it? Have a listen in and see. Anybody who tries to give you an answer to something like that, where you're talking about nervousness, fearfulness, potential aggression or whatever from a dog towards other dogs or towards people, don't seek advice online.
No.
Don't take it from a forum. Don't take it from somebody else who's
avoid
had a dog
breed
like
specific
that.
Groups.
Anything like that. Seek actual, reputable, professional help from somebody who can demonstrate the fact that they have dealt with it before, they've successfully resolved it, and they're able to work with you.
Yeah.
We can recommend a couple of good ones if you need it.
Yeah, yeah.
you're one.
Good stuff.
If you've got an interesting question or a nick that you wish to share, Jamie's about to tell you how to get in touch.
I'm going to do exactly that, and it's not difficult. In fact, it's very easy. It's easier than choosing what you're going to feed your dog. It's just difficult for me to remember what I'm supposed to be saying. But if you're on social media, at Dog Scholar Podcast is where you'll find us. Alternatively, you can email podcast@thedogscholar.com.
And that's all we've got time for this week, I'm afraid. But if you've enjoyed the show, please do share it with a friend, because if they don't like it, maybe the dogs will.
We've got a tweeny bit left. As always, Danny, final thoughts. What do you got?
Whilst it might be nice for you to see your dog playing with his doggy friends, the science is out. Your dog actually gets adequate fulfillment from playing with you. Take the time to play with your dog.
See you next week.